Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome into Stacking Dubs. Today, we're going to continue our talks about Jonathan Kuminga and the Warriors' plans to likely hold on to him going forward. And we're going to talk about basically the three different scenarios that could play out in terms of keeping him. We're going to talk about what a breakout from Jonathan Kuminga scenario would look like, what it would take to get there, and essentially from a on the court, off the court, individual development, all those things that we're going to need to see from Kuminga and the Warriors to make something like that a long-term fit. Before we get into all that, I'll just summarize my last episode about the Kuminga just re-signing. And, you know, I do like Jonathan Kuminga a lot. I think he's a ton of upside, and I think he can be and will be an all-star someday. Obviously, we know it's not the perfect fit for the Warriors. For those reasons, I've thought that retaining Kuminga, especially in the long term, is probably not my favorite outcome, but it can work. And my reasons are really just being that, again, as much as I like him, it's just he is your biggest trade asset. You already know that it doesn't quite fit, and we haven't really seen it through, but signs in small sample size point to it not being the best fit with Steph, Jimmy, and Draymond. And when he's your biggest asset, it seems like if you want to upgrade your roster and not just run it back with pretty much the same team, which we can debate as a contender or not, I tend to think it's a tier, maybe even two tiers below true contender status. But we don't really know that at this point. And with a little bit of growth from everybody, including Kuminga, hey, maybe this team is a contender. And so I'm open to exploring that. So by no means am I saying don't re-sign Kuminga. I'm not saying I hate Kuminga, nor that I don't like Kuminga. It just makes sense to me if I'm putting my GM hat on to explore all different trades. And really what we're saying when we're saying, hey, the Warriors want to re-sign Jonathan Kuminga, it's looking likely. I think what it truly means is that they've explored the trade market and there isn't really much there, especially not that kind of $25 to $30 million type player like your Cam Johnsons and those type of guys that I've mentioned on several of the videos. It doesn't seem like the market's quite there at this point. It doesn't mean it won't open up eventually. The season still hasn't ended, but I think if we're reading between the tea leaves, it means they're just not getting the value in the market for Kuminga at this time. So what that means is that the Warriors are betting on a Kuminga breakout. The different scenarios that play out here, if you're going to re-sign Jonathan Kuminga, obviously one, he holds his trade value. So you re-sign him, he grows a little bit. He basically plays the value of his, let's just call it a $25 million contract. And, you know, he improves. He sort of fits with the Warriors. Maybe he doesn't, but he's scoring, you know, close to 18, 20 points a game. And he's doing, you know, he saw some growing pains, but you see the potential like we all do. And there is still a market for him potentially by midseason, and now you can combine that, call it $25 million full base year compensation, and use that as an asset to go out and get a player that can help you. And that's the plan if he holds value and you want to still trade him. My initial thought on that is I don't think that the Warriors are going to be chasing a $40, $50 million type player at any point. I've always thought that they're going to be chasing this $25 million player. And so if that player was available now, and again, we'll just use Cam Johnson as an example. I think he's only like $20 million. But the point is that, no, you can't just trade Kuminga for Cam Johnson right now. But if he was available and they did want to do something with Kuminga, if you want to make it happen now, you just have to attach Moses Moody. $11.9, $12 million contract. Yeah, it sucks to just kind of throw Moody in there just to make the salaries work. But, you know, you could argue that Moses Moody's $12 million contract is actually nice to get off of. It's really the biggest value in there. And right now is that it is our only middle salary to use for trades. And I do like Moody. But again, if we're going to upgrade this roster, I need to see a lot of growth from Moses. And he's getting better. And, you know, he had a stretch last year that was towards the end of the season, which is great. But come the playoffs, and maybe it was that hand issue, but come the playoffs, it's hard for me to really bank on that Moody breakout as well. And so for that reason, if the trade was there at this point and you knew you were going to be able to get a good, two-way third scorer type guy that provides spacing and fits this roster better than, say, this version of Kuminga does, I would be on board with trading Kuminga and Moody, if you have to throw in picks, whatever, for that player now, rather than like the scenario we're talking about. You re-sign Kuminga, maybe a player in that range becomes available at that time. You don't really know what that market looks like. Maybe there's no one available, and hey, you're just rolling with Kuminga, and maybe that's fine. But my point is that you might have more options now than you do later, and there's just so much out of your control later. Those, again, I'm kind of reiterating my last video, but those are the reasons why I just don't want to pass up on a trade right now, unless what you want to do, and it sounds like the Warriors, what they want to do is they want to bet on Kuminga, and you want to bet on his growth, and you're betting on a breakout. You want to see it through that he could break out. And you know what? I know I didn't show the enthusiasm last video, but I do like Kuminga. I try to preach patience as much as I can for him to break out because I do think he will eventually break out. I don't know if that breakout eventually will fit this Warriors team, more particularly with the Steph Curry window. And to me, all that matters, and I hope you would agree, all that matters to me right now is that the Warriors win another championship with Steph. I'm not considering anything beyond that. Give it another 2, maybe 3, hopefully 4 years with Steph. Maximize everything you can to win now for Steph. And again, that's all number one priority, number two priority, number three priority, win now with Steph. That's just me. Hope I think most of you guys are in the same situation. So, anyways, back to my points. Scenario one is Kuminga kind of holds value. You've successfully basically washed that half salary of base year compensation. He's now worth, call it, $25 million. You're still able to have Moody's contract or whatever you've done with that. And you're looking to wheel and deal for a trade, maybe better players on other teams. Open up and you can make a move. Maybe they don't. That's scenario one, which it seems like the Warriors are kind of heading towards. Number two, the bad scenario is Kuminga. You resign him and he does not improve much or at all. He is not a fit. Maybe something, there's injuries. And I don't want to throw that out there, but maybe he loses value, which is possible. Maybe it's not working. And although Steve Kerr is committed to playing Kuminga a whole bunch, maybe it doesn't work, and maybe we missed our chance to sell high on Kuminga, and he is now deemed a bad contract at $25 million. Now you're sort of stuck because at that point, it's probably not fitting with this Warriors team. If he's not playing well, I don't see why this core four, if you want to call it that, would be working. And you don't really have a lot of moves you can do there, short of just attaching a bunch of picks to try to offload Kuminga. You're not getting a ton of value. It becomes a big mess. And that is the downside to re-signing Kuminga, is that if it doesn't get better, it gets bad much quicker. I'm not going to talk too much more about scenario two, but when you think about it like that, and that, hey, if this might be resigning Kuminga, that might be your big move, the only move you can make in the rest of the Steph Curry era. If he loses value, you cannot do anything, and you are basically having Steph ride into the sunset with this team as currently constructed. Maybe it's competitive, maybe it's not. In this scenario, it probably wouldn't be all I'm going to say about scenario two. Last scenario, the good scenario. We're going to talk about this for the rest of the time for the most part. A Kuminga breakout. Jonathan Kuminga breaks out as a 23-year-old, and you're winning games. You found ways to make it work despite the lack of spacing, or what we perceive to be a lack of spacing. And you decide we are going to build around a core of Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, and Jonathan Kuminga. And we'll throw Pods in there as well because he's young. But that is your core going forward, and it is working. I love it. Let's hope for this. What will it take to get there? Let's just start from the Kuminga side of things. So, what does a breakout look like for Jonathan Kuminga, the player? I'm starting on the defensive side of the ball because that's where the issues are more so than offense. I think Kuminga has to be your point of attack defender. He is your best athlete on the court. With Wiggins gone, and we saw it against Anthony Edwards. Timberwolves. He has the potential to be your best on-ball defender, especially against guards and wings. I'll always take Draymond, against wings and bigs. But Jonathan Kuminga, for all the energy throughout the course of a regular season and just, basically taking on that assignment of working on the defensive end, he needs to emerge as your point of attack defender. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. A breakout for him means he is an above average to a good defensive player at his length, athleticism, and build. No excuses for him not to be, other than he just didn't put enough work into it. Also think that, hey, if you're re-signing Kuminga, you don't have a ton of luxury to make a lot of other moves, especially to fill a lot of the gaps that we're going to talk about soon. The size, the shooting, it probably means you're not bringing in another point of attack defender. You might be re-signing Gary Payton II. We know what that kind of looks like already. Kuminga is going to be your horse in terms of attacking, and he's going to take on that old Wiggins role, and a breakout from him. Number one, I'm pointing to him becoming that point of attack lead defender on the perimeter for us. Secondarily, he also needs to fall in line as a team defender. That team defense, he needs to be on a string. He needs to not fall asleep on the backside. He needs to just know positioning. He needs to, I mean, you have Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler there, and they're barking at everybody where to be. You have two lions. You have two captains on the defensive side of the ball. Just be a sponge, man. I know you've been doing it and there's been improvements, but there cannot be lapses rotating. You have to, again, at your verticality and athleticism, you have to be able to rotate over and block some shots and give us some rim protection. Lastly, when we do get stops, you got to rebound. I think everybody in Dubs Nation, led by Steve Kerr, would say, Jonathan Kuminga, your rebounding, especially on the defensive side, is, if not the number one thing, a number two or three thing that you have to get better. And these are just the things. It's the trend with Kuminga. You just have to commit to it. It's a mental thing. It's an effort thing. It's just, you need to work on those little things that are going to make you into that 25 plus million dollar player, in addition to you being that 18, 20 point scorer. Which brings me to the offensive side of the ball. So a Kuminga breakout also looks like an 18. I said 18 to 20 points. I guess I would like a little bit better. And if we're truly talking breakout, he's probably scoring more points than Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler, at least in the regular season, he's going to be averaging about 18, maybe 19 points. He's going to be distributing the ball. He's going to be pacing himself. There'll be games where we've seen, he's scoring low teens in terms of scoring. Kuminga needs to be consistently at worst a floor of 15 points. And then there needs to be games where he's in the mid 20s, being our leading scorer efficiently, might I add, is the most important thing. Can't be on a huge volume. He needs to be an efficient scorer. That entails getting to the hoop. That entails getting fouled and knocking down some free throws. Anything that you need to do to be, call it, close to 50% from the field score, averaging, I'd say, at least 19 points at a minimum. In terms of not just numbers, but just what I want to see, it's, you need to have, find ways for him to get into that dunker spot, right? You need to provide spacing in other ways than just shooting. Obviously, we know his three-point shooting, it's, I don't even want to say hit and miss, it's just kind of like a 33%. He had 1 year, he shot 36% from three. Open shots, it needs to be closer to that 36%. If it's open shots, it needs to be 37%, 38% if you're just trying to provide some spacing. And in addition to shooting, that spacing comes from being able to be a vertical spacer. Can you cut baseline out of a Steph or whoever else, pick and roll? Can you cut baseline and finish plays vertically? Most importantly, in terms of spacing, what we don't really think about, I need Kuminga to be a better screener. Be a better cutter, be better off ball without the ball in your hands. All those things that Steph, Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala did so well is they set great screens off ball. They know when to cut, and those things are just getting the defense moving. And those are ways that if you're not getting respected, just standing in the corner, providing spacing as a shooter, now the defense has to respect you anytime you're cutting back door or cutting to space, cutting through the lane, setting back screens. It's all that extra activity. It's going to be ways you can make plays and create space for specifically Steph. The biggest reason why I think it's an injustice to roll out, at least right now, the JK Jimmy, Draymond lineup with three, we're gonna just quote unquote call them non-shooters. It's an injustice to Steph, especially if you want to close with that lineup, because we know Steph Curry can shoot the lights out, this and that. Steph Curry is, he works if he's going to get into the lane. He has to work to get to the hoop. And if you're not going to provide him enough spacing where essentially four and a half, sometimes all five defenders can just be, foot in the lane, foot in the paint, just keeping Steph out of the lane. And then in addition to just, running him off the 3-point line, it's an injustice to Steph. And that's truly where it does hurt not having the spacing, is that you're just limiting what your best player can do without spacing. On the flip side, I think you need to pair Jonathan Kuminga with Steph, where Steph is going to bring out the best in every player. I think NBA history, nobody raises the level of his teammates, even if it's just standing in the corner and providing them more spacing, than Steph Curry. So there needs to be, we're kind of talking more that what the Dubs can do on the floor now for to support a Kuminga breakout. There needs to be a concerted effort by the coaching staff to commit to running more actions for Kuminga with Steph, whether that's Steph setting screens for Jonathan Kuminga and that inverted two small 3-1 pick and roll, which works very well to get Kuminga downhill. Whether it's Kuminga becoming a better screener and rolling for Steph, and now you have a little two-way action that way, which we don't see much of for a lot of different reasons. It is finding a bunch of sets and actions for Kuminga with Jimmy, and so they can play off of each other because they are pretty interchangeable players. Can you find ways to use their similarities to create separation rather than being redundant on each other? The Warriors also need to find ways. I mean, it's easier said than done, but you just got to get out and transition. Kuminga might be one of the best transition players in the league. And during the regular season, you see a lot of it. During the playoffs, it's hard to get out and transition. And that starts with wreaking havoc on defense, causing more turnovers, getting out and running. But can you find ways to get more transition for Kuminga where he's at his best? And then lastly, a Kuminga breakout, just in terms of how it affects the Dubs, it's. You're going to have to ask Kuminga to be the lead of that second unit sometimes. I know right now it's Steph, and then it's when he's off the court, that second unit's led by Jimmy. There needs to be enough actions where it can just be initiated by Kuminga as a playmaker, whether he's scoring for himself, whether he's just getting downhill and then creating for others. We saw it. We're seeing glimpses of that. The assists and the playmaking, the decision making, it seems to be slowing down for him a bit. And that's one of the reasons I'm. For the most optimism on Kuminga is that he seems to be seeing the floor and making better, quicker decisions, not flawless, but better. Can he basically be the best player on our second unit at times and in coordination with Jimmy, where they're kind of alternating, my lead, your lead, occasionally with Steph's in there too? Can Kuminga basically go alpha for a shift a game, right? A 4-minute shift, hey, 6-minute shift, you're the guy, you're the leading scorer on the court, you're playing the best out of everybody. Those are the things that we're going to need from a Kuminga breakout for this Warriors team to truly be contenders. Now, those are all the things on the floor. Let's get to off the floor, which pertains more so to this offseason and roster construction. So, Kuminga aside, well, I guess re-signing Kuminga. Again, you don't have a lot of other assets to do much with, right? So you're only talking, you have about Moody at 12 million. You have Buddy at 9 million, which I don't think they want to trade Buddy at that price for. I mean, he gives you the thing you need most in shooting. And you have your mid-level exception at 5.7 million or so. The needs for the roster, it's pretty obvious. Two big things. It's you need to get bigger, you need some size, you need that center. And then secondly, you need more shooting. If you have Kuminga, if you didn't have Kuminga, the third thing would be you need kind of that sixth man scoring type guard wing, just like a Colin Sexton type player, a Kobe White type player. If you're keeping Kuminga, I don't think you need that anymore, especially if he's going to become a good point of attack defender on defense. Now you're okay at guard; it's a little thin, but you're banking on Pajemski being good. If you have that, all you need is a big and a shooter. Best case scenario, you're getting both in one package with a stretch big. And so, say you're committing to either Moody's contract and trade value at 12 million, and you're chasing a guy Or through free agency with the mid-level if you take someone, getting someone taking less money. So you're talking about Brook Lopez is probably the number one target. Less of a two-way, but just kind of a stretch. He's more of a power forward. The next two guys are more power forwards, but they do give you good shooting, not great defense. But again, you just need to stretch big. It'd be Bobby Portis, who's been recently linked to the Warriors, but also a lot of teams are going to be targeting him on that mid-level. He might not even opt out. I think it's got a $13 million team option. So it'd be hard for me to see him opting out for 13 and then signing with the Warriors or someone else at the taxpayer 5.7 million. I don't know if he's the type of player at this point in his career that's just going to be taking less. The second guy is Santi Aldama from the Grizzlies, who again is a kind of a more of a power forward. He's honestly more of like a small forward. I've talked about him a bit on my my episode about which bigs we should target. He provides you a lot of spacing. And the importance of a guy like that, or even Portis or Lopez, is that it just gives you so many different lineup combinations that compare with Jonathan Kuminga. Right now, it's like you almost have to play Quinton Post with Kuminga just to provide enough spacing. You typically also need to put Buddy in that situation, just so you have some space to maximize Kuminga and whoever else is out there. Usually it's Jimmy or Dre also. And yeah, that's you see where the problem lies with spacing. Also, potentially kind of a stretch big. I don't know if he's even going to be available and what the cost, but like an Al Horford, maybe if the Celtics are moving off, you know, I think he can do some things for about 15, 20 minutes to unlock some pieces and does a lot of other things well as well. Kind of dark horse like Chris Boucher. I always want to say Bobby Boucher, water boy, but Chris Boucher gives you a little spacing, a little height, a little athleticism. Not the best player, but someone that, you know, at your mid-level, you could kind of spin the wheels on that. I think, you know, if you're holding on to Kuminga, it puts you out of play for guys, you know, upwards of 20 million. So you're not gonna be able to get your Naz Reids. You're not really gonna be able to trade for Vucevic. I don't think that's in play anymore. If you're looking kind of more the other going two pieces, right? So if you don't get a stretch big, now you got to address your size issue and get a traditional big, but then you also need to address your shooting issue and get kind of a guard or a four that can shoot. So if you need to get two players, the kind of the traditional bigs on hopefully cheaper contracts or just via a cheap trade, I like Goga Batadze the most. I talked about him before. He's just kind of like a rich man's Kevon Looney. Which, no disrespect to Loon, but Batadze just kind of gives you a little bit more juice and just does everything that Looney does, but a little bit better. It's a little bit better finisher at the rim, a little bit better rim protection, just a little bit more size. Both good rebounders, not as good at offensive rebounder as Loon, but I think he just gives you a little bit more than Loon. So I can see that being an upgrade. Steven Adams, pretty one-dimensional. Better offensive rebounder than Loon, just gives you some just pure size and just a great locker room vet. I don't know how it fits. I don't know if you'd play for that cheap, but he does just give you some size. You could trade for Mark Williams. That would be the good get. If you can somehow go get Mark Williams from the Hornets, just a lob threat, young, basically a walking 15 and 10 guy. If you can get something like that and his contract, I want to say it's like 5 or 6 mil for at least another year, maybe 2 more years. If you can find a way to squeeze that on, and again, like I said earlier, I don't care about the future. Trade all the picks, trade almost all the picks, at least for the next few years. If you got to give up a one to go get Mark Williams, yeah, maybe. TJD and a one for Mark Williams. I don't even think you'd have to give up that much. Make it happen. That's your big right there on a good contract. There's a lot more bigs that could help you there, just throwing it out there. But then let's go kind of over to the shooters. That's the harder point because most of these shooters are not two-way guys. They're probably not even as two-way as like Buddy Hield, who held his own defensively, but let's not act like Buddy's a good defender. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is the best two-way of kind of these options, but he's not the best shooter. He's kind of like that 36% shooter, but he'll give you some spacing, but he's like the low end in terms of just shooting ability from three that you could chase here. That's a free agent. Other guys, he might have played himself out of the Warriors price range, but like a Malik Beasley on the Pistons, I think he led the league in 3-point shooting percentage this year, like something close, like over 45% or something wild like that. Another just pure shooter is Luke Kennard. All guys that, again, they'll give you spacing. Doesn't really fit every lineup. Won't be in your closing lineups unless you're desperate and losing. You just need spacing. So they're pieces. My point, and I guess my overall thought is, if you're getting that traditional big plus some kind of one-way shooter here, you're kind of asking Steve Kerr to play the same game with just mixing, matching lineups, spending half the season looking for lineup combinations. You're just not linking in that closing five. You're not linking in just your rotations, and there's just going to be a hole or two with every lineup on one side of the ball or the other. I don't know if I want to keep doing that for another year. It's been several years of doing that. I have always said, let's just, we need some more two-way players, and just, have seven or eight guys that play the majority of your minutes. Look at what Indiana's doing. Look at what the Thunder are doing. You just have your seven or eight guys, and no one really hurts you on one side of the ball or the other, and you're just riding with them, and look at where it's gotten them. So that's kind of what being a breakout looks like to me in terms of what he needs to do, what the Warriors need to do on the floor, and then what the Warriors need to do just in terms of roster construction in the offseason. Obviously, there's so many more players and so much more that can change, but that's just kind of my thoughts on what re-signing Kuminga looks like. So all that being said, I want the Warriors to work backwards, right? You need to exhaust all talks and negotiations for the dozens, if not, 50s to hundreds of different players that could help you. You need to explore what's available and what the best possible offer or price would be for all of them. Find some guys you like, work backwards from there to say, hey, we know we can go get Mark Williams. We know we can go get Beasley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker. So we know we'll have the pieces. So let's re-sign Jonathan Kuminga. Or you say, oh man, we can go get someone like a Cam Johnson, someone in that mid-tier range. We can go get like a Derek White, someone that helps you as a two-way player that you know is going to close for you. Maybe someone like a Jaren Jackson Jr. or like a big stretch five. You just exhaust all options to see what's available if that market's dried up, or you know what pieces you can get and it fits with Kuminga, then you go ahead, you resign him. My whole point from this video and last one was, don't just assume you're re-signing Kuminga right now just to re-sign him. Explore all options. And then if you need to re-sign him, now you see what the three scenarios can be. And you're praying for a Kuminga breakout. And we're rolling forward with him. And he's spending his whole career with the Warriors, including another championship in the Steph era, which is the most important thing. So be aggressive. If there's no two-way third scorer that fits your roster via trade, then take a look at re-signing Kuminga and kind of kick that can down the road and hope for a breakout. But at that point, remember, mid-season, if you're looking to trade him and he's kind of held value, you are gambling on how Kuminga plays, and you're gambling on the mid-season trade market and what's available then. And I don't like things that are out of your control. So do what you can now, control what's in your control. Okay, until next time, I've been Chris Chin. Give me a like, give me a subscribe. I love you guys very much. Until next time, peace, love, and stacking dubs.